For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
I was just walking by your room, and you know, I was thinking, boy, it's been a long time since we've had the little father-son chat.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I bought some magazines. Do you want to just flip to the center section? Well, this is the female form.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
This is Hustler, and this is a much more exotic magazine. Look at the expression on her face. You see that? See what she's doing? She's kind of looking right into your eyes, saying, "Hey, big boy. Hey, how you doing?" You see?
Right. And Brendan Sprague.
Shave is a magazine I'm not too familiar with, but again, if you flip to the center section, well, you see the detail that that they go into in this picture here.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a tropical plant or some underwater thing.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Okay, that was good.
Yeah,
see you at dinner.
I'll see you at dinner.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, youtube.com/1080TheFan. An Eastmoreland golf course favorite open there.
Yeah, every time I'm out there, the folks at Eastmoreland love telling me how much they love that open.
That's the one that they've quoted to me that they really enjoy. Yeah, so always appreciate hearing that one. If you want to reach the show, you can. You can text in, give your thoughts on all our bad opinions, or give us our love as well. Vancouver 4 text lines 503-864-6326. They teach you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at VancouverFord.com. Bill Conley's going to join us at 7:30.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm excited to talk to him.
I'm too. His SP Plus models, his takeaways from the first couple weeks, what does he make of some of the coaching that's been going on in college football? Bill Conley at 7:30, the former commissioner of college football until Dirt abandoned him because he fell in love with Josh Pate.
I dumped him. I dumped Bill Conley.
Well, you've always loved a good Southern Belle. And Josh Pate kind of fits that criteria for you.
It does. It's college football. Yeah. It's the South. It just fits, man.
A lot to get to in the second hour of the program. I want to kick it off, though, with the program down in Eugene. Mm. Dan Lanning had his Monday press conference.
That he did, Bob, last night.
You noted in the first hour of the show, which you can always catch at 1080thefan.com, seemed to be in a chipper mood.
Yeah.
Not as doom and gloom as maybe one would have imagined. And he talked about the offensive line. It's obviously a big area of concern and questions are going on right now. When's Bedford coming back? Is it as simple as saying, when Bedford returns, this offensive line's going to be amazing? Dan Lanning gave his thoughts on evaluating the offensive line last night.
And I think that a lot of people will, you know, look at our offensive line and talk about, well, this is the best. We actually watch every single clip on our staff. And I don't know if people realize, you know, like Pancho, he started three different positions for us last year. We were a really good O-line, but he had more snaps at right guard than any other position he's had snaps at here. Also played some center for us. Also played some left guard. So across the board, you know, we'll continue to work to figure out what's the best group, knowing that it might not just be one group that plays, you know, along the offensive line for us. And until people get healthy, it may continue to look different. We're going to have to keep challenging ourselves to figure out what that looks like. I do think we found some highlights, you know, at times of guys looking well, but, you know, had you know, some lowlights at multiple positions, and didn't matter necessarily what position a guy was at. There was mistakes at all of those. But I promise you, nobody looks at it closer than we do, right? We spend a lot of time and effort looking at it, and we see every single rep at practice, which everyone else doesn't see. So we'll keep evaluating it. We've got guys that we can play winning football with, and that's the big key, is making sure we're able to utilize those guys.
So a couple things there. He was also asked in some follow-ups about younger players maybe getting elevated up. He said, no, they haven't earned it, but then he also dropped the line, there's not really a large gap from the top of our group to the bottom of the group. So that was interesting.
It was a no slash yes answer. Like, yeah. I don't expect them to play, but the gap's not that big.
And then he's also asked about rotating centers in and out, and if that's really the right thing to do. And he basically said, we did it last year. You guys didn't ask me these questions last year.
It's because it was good last year.
Well, he said it's not just about snaps. You could have a good snap, but maybe you're not a good blocker, or maybe you're a good blocker, but you struggle with the snaps. And so, an update on the biggest area of concern for Oregon fan, because the first 2 weeks have not been great for that group.
No, and it might be the poison pill that dooms your entire season if you don't figure it out, if you don't get healthy up front. My read on the center thing was interesting. So nobody criticized it last year because JPJ was the unquestioned starter at center. Now, they would spell him from time to time, or he'd get a nick or a bump or a bruise, and they'd say, all right, let's give Poncho some snaps. That's why it wasn't criticized last year. I think largely you do want to have somebody up front that's the leader of the offensive line, similar to when they had Alex Forsythe. That was the same thing, of a guy who's a leader up front, who's in charge of the calls, who's in control of everything that's going on at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And right now, Oregon's offensive line just doesn't have that. I think his point at the end was very telling. And from what I've heard, this is the issue that they're dealing with. You have two different centers that you're trying to figure out, how can we make this work? Poncho's the better blocker. He's a better offensive lineman. He played a ton as a true freshman last year, as Dan Lanning pointed out, because of his ability. He's not a 100% trustworthy snapper of the football. So, insert issue. Charlie Pickard, a better snapper, more consistent snapper
but
of the football.
Nobody seems to like it.
But he's not a very good blocker. So it's like, damned if I do, damned if I don't.
What now, do you value more? Because I think it's the snap. I want a clean snap. Yeah. I think you just kind of
And then
to
you
deal
see
with
2 yards of carry against Idaho, and I say, is that really that important? Throw one over his head every now and then if I get 7 yards of carry, right? So, but here's the issue. It's late in that game, Charlie Pickard, who is the more reliable snapper of the football, snapped it early twice.
He did.
And one of them led to a fumble that should have lost you the game, because Dylan Gabriel somehow caught it and then decided to fumble it after he caught it, which just keystone.
Just go
cops.
Down. Just go down.
Just fall down, dude. And then I think after that second bad snap, they took him out of the game and went with the alternative lineup of Poncho at center and Strother at guard. Now, Poncho hasn't had any bad snaps. He was great in the Fiesta Bowl last year, but that's just been my read on it. And they're trying to figure out how do we parcel through all this, because they're still without Bedford, who might not play this week, and they're still without Dave Lulley. And until they get all those pieces together, I think he is as desperate as anybody to find that combination that works.
Hold this for Saturday when I'm dead wrong. When I'm watching this game, I kind of had takeaways from his press conference that he was alluding that they probably won't have Bedford back this week. I could be wrong. Yeah. Bedford may return, and Friday we know that. And
it was ironic because last Monday he said he should be on track to play, and he didn't end up playing.
Yeah, that's kind of my point, isn't it? He sounded like, I don't know, he didn't say it outright, but the way he was talking about, and you know, until certain guys get back from injury, and to me that sounded more like he might be out another week. I had Danny text me yesterday something they had talked about noon to three that I had missed, and his takeaway was that Dusty was alluding that if they get Bedford back, all is fine. That it's just that simple. Is it that simple for you? And if I'm misrepresenting what Dusty said, I apologize.
How dare you?
I'm telling you what the text said was that it appears that Dusty thinks that this offensive line is just A-okay once Bedford comes back. There's nothing to worry about. Are you in that same camp?
Yes and no. Yes, because I do think it makes you a much better unit up front. No, because you have now seen the potential future that awaits you if another injury happens. You don't have the depth to withstand it on the offensive line. So that's the scary part for me, is that Bedford coming back might fix a lot of the issues. And maybe he plays this weekend and they run the ball like crazy. I will say they ran the ball better this week against Boise than they did the week before. But a lot of that early in the game was just Jordan James being a man-child.
He was unbelievable.
And then later in the game when they had that alternate lineup in, they were a little bit better. Not perfect, but I think with that backup group now, or the second group, I should say, with Poncho at center, Strother at guard, it was like 13 carries for 77 yards on the game. Mm-hmm. With Pickard at center, it was like 9 carries for 48 yards, something like that. So slightly better. Not perfect. But again, you have seen, it might fix things in the short term, but can you withstand another injury? What if one of your tackles goes down? What if Poncho gets hurt? What if another guard goes down? Like, you don't have a lot of depth up front. And so you are walking a wire thin margin the rest of the year, even if Bedford comes back, and just praying every time one of those guys goes down, please don't be a significant injury, because I don't know where the depth is behind them.
An early mail sack question for you from me. What would July Dirt have said if I told him this was the future of Oregon 2 weeks into the season?
Would be not happy at all, but I'd also tell
would he
you
call me a liar.
Yes,
you're gonna struggle with Idaho.
I would
and
call
Boise
you a liar.
State.
I would call you a liar. But if you told me the thing that doomed Oregon season was going to be the offensive line, I have been raising that banner all off season. This is an issue for them. They haven't recruited very well up front. There's a lot of criticism about the offensive line coach that he hired. They had an NFL guy in Clem. He left, and they went and hired a guy who's incredibly young in Elite Terry. Now they have Kavanaugh there helping out. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's a poison pill inside. Maybe he's a mole as well. I don't know. I want to sit down with him, get the DOJ on the case there. But they have had issues up front. They haven't recruited at a very high level the last 2 years. And when you're trying to plug holes through the transfer portal, it's fine. But I think you look to the future. Cornelius is a transfer. Harper is a transfer. Bedford, if he plays, is a transfer. Strother is a transfer. Yeah. I mean, I think the only guys right now up front, I mean, Pickard's a walk-on. Connerly is a recruit that they got. And Poncho is a recruit that they got.
Yep.
But a lot of these other guys are guys that they brought in. That is the biggest issue that he has in his program right now. And if you would have told me that that's the reason Oregon doesn't live up to the hype, I could have seen that coming a mile away.
Yeah.
I just didn't think it was going to happen this early in the season.
The other thing, too, is as Duck Fan noted yesterday on the show, on the text line, just seeing, I guess, the evolution slash kind of like evolving way that Will Stein calls plays with this problem. If this is a problem this weekend against Oregon State,
it changes the way you call games.
You know, I know Bedford will eventually come back, and that I would assume this problem's happening because you have no Bedford, and so it's kind of the same group, and it's a makeshift thing, and we hope for the best. But if it is a problem this weekend against the Beavs, that is going to be fascinating to watch how Will Stein is calling offense or changing or tweaking because of not being able to trust the guys up front.
Yeah, and it makes calling. Look, I have had my issues with some of his play calls this year, but I think everybody's just out of sync, because the primary thing Oregon's offense wants to do is they want to run the football, and everything else stems off of that. I mean, that's really the case with every offense in all of football. You run the ball, and then everything sets up from there, play action pass, and you take your shots, you draw the defense up. And when you're just simply out of sync running the ball, and things are going for 2 yards, and you're in second and eight, second and nine, third and seven constantly, it just makes things challenging. It makes you have times where you surrender punt from your own 10-yard line because you don't want to take a sack back to your three. The glimmer of hope that I have for this team in the short term is that I don't think for the next month that they have to be perfect to win their games.
But they have 1 month until they have, Ohio State.
Exactly. That's the thing. And so you get, if you were able to get through Oregon State this weekend, save this for Monday, they might lose the game. If you can get through that game, they got a bye week the next week. Mm-hmm. And then you play UCLA. Mm-hmm. And then you play Michigan State. You don't have to be perfect to beat any of those teams. Boise State might be better than any of those three teams. We'll wait and see how the rest of the year plays out. So you don't have to be perfect, but you got a couple of weeks. And if you don't figure it out by October 12th, if you haven't already lost by then, you're doomed in that game.
Lanning also was asked about this weekend's game. So a little bit of a
peekaboo
on this weekend's Civil War game that's happening on a week three down in Corvallis. We'll get to that audio. Bill Conley at the bottom of the hour next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Well, maybe in the show's history, I put up our first offensive line poll question at Dirt and Sprague. You're going to have to find that one.
There had to be a Penei Sewell poll question back in the day.
Well, that's a good point. We probably had one on Penei Sewell.
Is he good or
should
great?
He be the number one overall draft pick? Maybe something like that.
No, I'm talking in-season duck offensive line poll question. Mm. There was never any. What would you question about Penei Sewell? Is he the greatest duck lineman?
He's in the conversation, that's for damn sure.
The question is, if the Ducks get their right guard Matthew Bedford back, will Oregon's offensive line woes go away, yes or no? 100% no so far.
Not a lot of confidence right now.
Civil War, and I know we don't like to burn it all before the Friday show, because Friday show is usually pretty local college football base, but Dan Lanning's press conference yesterday, he was asked about it, if it's lost its luster because they're not in the same conference and it's week three, it's, you know, usually an evening end of season game, and now it's a 12:30 week three game. And here was Dan Lanning's answer to, has it lost its luster, the rivalry between Oregon and Oregon State this weekend?
It certainly does to me. I think, you know, the rivalry is something I always appreciate. You know, I think that makes it college football fun. I think those things are a lot of fun. And this is a game that's had back and forth for us. You know, year one, we weren't able to pull it out. You know, last year we were. But this is a fun game for the state of Oregon. It's certainly a fun game for our players. I think they know exactly what it means. It means a little bit more. Is it another game? Yeah, it's another game. Is it important for us? It's very important for us. Our guys want to go out there and have success.
Yeah, so it still means something to him. He was also asked a very bad but good question. You can ask bad questions, but they're good because sometimes they elicit good responses. And he was asked in that press conference a few questions later if they still use the motivation by losing
19 straight runs
in Corvallis as motivation. And he basically looked deadpan and said, I think about that all the time.
Yes.
And there was a real, like, fire and brimstone in his eyes if you watch the press conference.
Never forget.
He has never forgotten that game.
Never forget. What were they up by, 18 points in that? Was it an 18-point blown lead?
I think it was 31. Wasn't it 31-10?
Was it 21-point lead?
I think it was 21. Yeah.
I blocked it out of my memory. I don't think about that every day, Dan.
That guy, largely in his life, I don't think had ever experienced anything like that. So he has not forgotten what happened the last time they were in Corvallis. And I at least appreciate having an Oregon coach, because we've had some in the past. It's like, nameless, faceless opponents, who cares? Like, okay, douchebag. This guy appreciates rivalry, still looks at this as a rivalry game, and is still fired up to coaching it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same because it's not a conference game. The implications aren't there, and it will never match the memories that we have of winner goes to the Civil War, or excuse me, goes to the Rose Bowl, or winner wins a conference, or even that blown lead that you talked about. Oregon State wasn't playing for it that day. But if Oregon won that game, they would have gone to the Pac-12 championship game, and they would have played USC. But they blew that lead, and they lost, and instead, Utah went in that place, and they ended up beating USC in that game. So you used to have that end of the season major implication, or you could be the spoiler for the other team's implications. I'll never forget 2008 when all the Oregon State student section had roses in their mouth, and Oregon went in there.
I definitely didn't see that
in
person.
Just steamroll them, and it was one of my favorite Civil War memories ever. I'll never forget that game. So it will never be the same without that. Mm. I am glad, though, at least in the short term, that we get to enjoy it for a week. And I think both sides understand it. Your side is more equipped to do that because of the amount of people on the staff that played in the game that are from the state, that understand the rivalry. My staff's not quite the same. It's more of a hodgepodge of people that come from far and wide. But I think Dan Lanning losing the game the way that he did in the first year told him all he needed to know about that rivalry. And he will, to his point, he will never forget that game.
I always wonder what it is like for somebody. You mentioned him in the last segment. Mike Kavanaugh's assistant offensive line coach. He is a Riley guy.
He is.
Coached with Riley for years at Oregon State, and he followed him to Nebraska. And eventually, obviously, that didn't work out for Mike Riley. And Kavanaugh had to, you know, flex, and he's been to a couple stops before now he's in Oregon. This has got to be a weird thing. I mean, is it, or are those guys so conditioned in that profession where it's just like none of that matters?
How long was he in Corvallis for?
You
know that off the top of your head?
There for a decent amount.
Because if you had like multiple stops, and then that's just one of your stops, because I couldn't remember how long he was there. And that was just like he was here for 7 years, here for 20 years, yeah. Here for 10 years, and then I'm in Corvallis for 5, and then I move on. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
So I'm looking at this. This says his 10th season. So he was 10 or more years he was down in Corvallis.
Down in Corvallis.
He was there for a long time.
It's a little strange. How are Beaver fans going to welcome Atticus Sappington back to town?
Incredibly loud boos.
I am partially hoping that if Oregon is able to open up a lead in this game, that just for this the pure joy of it, that they do a fake field goal and run him. Like with a, if they get a 21-point lead and then 1 point
30 yards out,
they got to kick a field goal. They're just like, let's how about this?
Him kicking a game-winning field goal
would be bad.
I think they'd have to get like you know when they covered Trump after the shooting.
Yes, that's...
they might have to do that for Atticus because they're going to be throwing things at that dude. He's trying to walk out of Reese's Stadium.
We didn't even talk about that guy on Saturday night flashing like West Coast signs to the camera while he's warming up for a game-winning kick. What are you doing, dude? He's like, this is your moment in the spotlight. You're going, what's up, to the camera? This isn't TRL, dude. You got a game-winning kick coming up.
He also missed an extra point.
Yes.
And you know what's
which
funny?
Is the whole reason they needed to kick a game-winning kick.
What's fun? Well, yeah, that. And the opposite.
They would have been up by one.
The other thing that was funny, and I'm not kidding when I tell you this, yeah. I actually, in my brain, was like, I wonder if he missed this kick because it was such a weird game. Dong. Oh my God, he missed the kick.
I think it was the Tez punt return. It was this moment of pure joy.
It was.
Like, oh my God, that's such an incredible highlight. And
you named it on the, or you said it on the text. You were like, every time something good happens, they just do something stupid immediately after. And I think it was like, dong.
Well, that was the reason at the end of the game, I was yelling at my TV to not, like, go run the ball into the end zone. I don't care if there's 20 seconds left on the clock. Don't leave it up to a kick.
I'm sure Daschle or somebody's done the interview. Maybe Angie. I don't know. I still want to do like a 15 to 20 minute podcast episode with his parents, the Atticus name.
And Sappington, where's
just
the
Atticus,
lineage there?
Sir Atticus Sappington, yeah. Like, where did that come from? Family yeah. name. I didn't do enough research on that topic, but I just find that to be a fascinating situation.
Well, look, as of right now, I know he made the game winner on Saturday. He might be a loner. We might just leave him in Corvallis, depending on how that game goes for him. I'm not super thrilled with old Atticus early on.
We take him
back.
He
was automaticus, dude. That guy couldn't miss last year.
Yeah.
And he's missing PATs for us.
I'd still take him back. Our kicking situation ain't much better.
No, it's
Everett
not.
Hayes is out here missing kicks.
Yeah, he missed a big one on Saturday.
If you were a field goal kicker, by the way, I noticed this on the broadcast, too, before he flashed the West Coast, what's up before
what's
a game
what's up
winner?
To my homies? What are you doing?
Would you want your teammates coming up to you as you're warming and practicing for the game-winning kick?
Like I think
the
so.
Seconds when you want them coming up to you saying, hey, man, you got this.
I think I would want to get
I think it. I want to be left alone.
See, I feel like if I was left alone, I'd be too in my own head. Like, I'd want to, like, have somebody come up and be like, say a joke to you or something. Ease the tension. Cut the tension a little
bit. I'm talking
bit.
About them coming up to you saying, you got this, man.
Yeah. I think I want
you
that.
You got it, bro.
I want the support. I want the morale.
Really?
I do, yeah.
Swag, would you want to be left alone, or would you want some team support as you're practicing field goal kicks because you know you're probably kicking the game-winning field goal?
As I'm practicing? Is so, this like...
Yeah.
You're kicking it into the net on the sideline. Team is setting up for a game-winning
kick. The seconds are waning. You can kind of... Oh, okay. We all knew Oregon was just teeing up a game-winning field goal.
Yeah, once they burn their final timeouts, then they're like, okay, we're going to take the clock down. And
yeah, you knew that's what they
play.
Were going to do.
Yeah, I want to, you know, I don't want them interrupting my prep, but yeah, come on over. And if I'm standing there waiting, looking at the clock,
so
am I going
in? So
in
between you kicking the balls in the net, but, you're grabbing the ball, yeah. You're reteeing, you want them coming up to you to say, hey man, you
absolutely.
Got this.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Leave me alone.
If I'm over there stewing in my own thoughts, dude, it's not going to go well for
really?
Me. Yeah, I'm going to start doubting myself.
See, I think more people coming up to me.
Psyching myself out.
You got this, bro. Well, there's another guy that believes in me. What if I don't live up to this belief?
Nah, they believe in me, man. Yeah. My teammates, they got my back.
Yeah, I want to be left alone. Leave me alone.
Don't touch me, man.
Don't talk to me.
Don't talk to me. Don't look at me.
Go away.
Don't touch my ball.
Atticus Sappington and Dan Lanning returning to Corvallis. Oh, it's going to be an atmosphere.
12:30 Saturday, Fox.
If that camera's not shaking, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
That atmosphere is going to be great. There is a slight part of me that wants to joke. I'm not going to because it's punching down. Of all the Beaver fans that didn't want this game, singing a little bit of a different tune this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, bad offensive line.
Yeah. Say now there's a little bit of hope, and you're going to know it's a sellout crowd. It's not going to be that game one crowd against Idaho State. Well, standing room only for this one.
Also, last time they were there, the construction wasn't finished.
It was half of a stadium. Yeah.
And then before that, it was
COVID.
The COVID game. Yeah.
Yes, they haven't had a full stadium
since,
Civil
what,
War.
2018?
2018.
This is, it is national TV right in the middle of the day, Fox
on
Network.
A terrible weekend of football.
This
by
is
the
a
way.
Look.
It's
I know
so
I'm being
important
biased.
For Oregon State, and
it's a top three game in college football this weekend. I really believe it to my core. I believe it.
Yes.
I know I'm biased. I know it doesn't matter that I say it. If you look at the slate,
I
Oregon's
think,
shaky. Oregon State's fighting for conference and national.
Well, same
respect.
Thing with Washington State. There's a ton riding on, not necessarily the win or the loss. There's still a 2.5 touchdown underdog in this game.
Oh yeah, I'm getting 17.
But they
easy.
But for Washington State's only a 4-point
dog. I'm
gonna
go lay a grand on the Beavs just to bring the line down. Give myself more favorable odds.
But their ability to perform at a power conference school level in these games and make them exciting and trade blows is so important moving forward.
We'll go to Conley here. Pate is in our bubble, and Pate is very nationally known, but like even above Pate, there's another level. That Oregon spotlight is now shining. It's been 2 weeks, and people are like, hey, Oregon,
There's going to be a lot of eyes on them for that reason this week.
Massive game for them. Massive game for them. Bill Conley will join us coming up next of ESPN.com fame, national college football writer. Don't forget, with the mail sack at 8:15, so we'll get to that. Get your mail sack questions into the Vancouver 4 text line, 503-864-6326. Bill Conley joins us next to talk about the Civil War, the Apple Cup, college football dealings on The Fan.
All right, let's get to the college football world. I'm not doing great. Oregon Ducks have not looked good 2 weeks into the season.
2-0.
They are 2-0, though, and they take on in-state rival this weekend. Joining us now is our good friend Bill Connolly at ESPN underscore Bill C on Twitter. ESPN college football writer, the man behind the S&P Plus. Bill, good morning to you. What in the world's going on with Oregon football right now?
not a lot of good things, I guess. Well, actually, no, I'll start with the positive. They are far more efficient than their opponents so far. They're staying on schedule. They are doing a lot of things that that good teams tend to need to do, and that's a very good thing. Creating almost no big plays whatsoever is a bit of a surprise. Losing the field position battle, not doing well from all that well from a turnover standpoint. There have been a lot of weird things going on here, but just basically they have not made nearly enough plays, big plays, to be the top three-ish team that we kind of expected them to be this year.
So what are the SP Plus numbers saying about Oregon right now? Like, where are they at now? If they're not in the top three, where are they largely slated between numbers what?
Well, right now they've slipped from third to ninth. Now, if you continue to underachieve by about 25 points per game in the projections, you'll fall a lot further than that. and that's basically the only team that has underachieved more so far this year, just in terms of missing projections, was UTSA, and they've had a bunch of injuries on offense at least. So, yeah, I mean, they just haven't, you are 2-0, and if you get by Oregon State, you won't play at a genuinely awesome team probably until week 7. So start looking like the team now and you're fine. But, they just haven't. No big plays, given up a ton of big plays, just haven't looked the part so far, and that needs to stop.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, is you got a couple more weeks to figure this out, but the panic button has been definitely pressed. What are the numbers telling you about the weekend matchup? Because I think the spread was 14.5 when it opened. It's been bet up a little bit. You like it to be closer than that, and the model likes it to be closer than that. But just the matchup between Oregon and Oregon State, a team who was underwhelmed, and an Oregon State team who hasn't really been tested, but always good defensively, and a really tough place for Oregon to go in and play on the road.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like the projections as they currently stand are Oregon by 13.5, basically. So pretty close to the line. But, if you want to pull any sort of trend information from that, Oregon State won their last game by 16 points above projections and so on. And, Idaho State was a little bit of a different story, I guess. But, no, I mean, they're basically, Oregon State's a team that, I said Oregon's given up a lot of big plays. Well, Oregon State's not making any of them. It feels like this might be a game that comes down to just field position and staying on schedule and who can, you know, get two first downs before they punt, that kind of thing. And you would assume that Oregon still has the playmakers to eventually pull ahead, but they got to play better than they have. You know, if they don't, then it's going to be super tight.
If I took the SP Plus out and college football fan Bill Connelly, because you are not the numbers, you share the numbers, but you are not the numbers, who has been the most impressive team sans Georgia in college football to you? Who has really opened your eyes?
Well, Texas, obviously, but that's a little too obvious, I think. They still aren't running the ball absurdly well by any means, but the way they handled the Michigan pass defense the other day in a hostile environment, making it extremely not hostile very quickly, I think that did say something. I think they are certainly up there, but it is funny, after the mixed impressions that we've gotten in these first 2 weeks, there are really only four teams, I think, that have genuinely looked phenomenal both weeks. It's those two, Ole Miss and Tennessee, four SEC teams across the board. Ole Miss has played less than nobody. I understand that, but they've treated Furman like Furman's a top 30 or 40 SEC team. They won by 76. Middle Tennessee's not good, but they won by 49. They've looked the part so far, and it's going to be like another month before they really play anybody who will test their kind of top 10 bona fides. So they're going to probably continue to look good. And Tennessee, they just replaced their extremely inconsistent quarterback with a five-star sophomore who's looked pretty good so far. The offense looks explosive again, and they messed around a little bit with NC State, but once they hit the gas, they were up four touchdowns very quickly. So that's really those are it. A lot of teams look really good or good twice or really good once or whatever, but those are the four that have stood out so far.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Bill Connelly, our guest, ESPN college football writer, the man behind the SP Plus model, at ESPN_BillC on Twitter. He's one of the best in the college football world, so go give him a follow there. I look at the Big Ten right now, Bill, and it's kind of fascinating to me. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, is USC a front runner here? Like, USC's opening eyes. Ohio State's passing game's been a little clunky, but they're beating bad teams. Michigan's offense looks completely lost. Penn State, hey, great week one, and then what the hell are you doing in week two? And we've already gone over Oregon and how inconsistent they've been. Just where are you at right now on the Big Ten race and how that kind of looks 2 weeks into the season?
Yeah, I mean, a week ago I was like, man, is Pitt State the best team in this conference? And then, now I'm like, okay, no, Ohio State's definitely the best team in this conference. Ohio State messed around for a half against Akron. They really just were plodding along, and then they finally hit the accelerator and did fine there. Looked great last week. Penn State was definitely the most confusing impression though, because what they did against West Virginia was just, they looked so physically dominant. Yeah. Like, never mind that their play calling actually was fun and they were making big plays again. And it's been a while. Like, they just looked like a different specimen of athlete, across the board. And then they go and they barely beat Bowling Green the week after that. And, a lot of that was just, it felt like Bowling Green just had a really good plan and scored three times really quickly and then trailed off from there. But yeah, I mean, it was a completely different impression. A lot of teams did that, have given extremely conflicting impressions so far, and what you're left with is Ohio State. I think USC is definitely, we don't quite know how good LSU is. The fact that they struggled to put away Nicholls State wasn't necessarily encouraging in that regard. But they certainly looked good last week. The defense has absolutely shown up so far, relative to expectations. And I would assume that they're probably back to being a top 15-ish level team. But yeah, right now, I think Ohio State's extremely trustworthy compared to everybody else.
Bill, should we be hitting the panic alarm, the button, whatever it is, on Marcus Freeman?
Well, it's so confusing. I guess really last week shouldn't have been as big a surprise as it was, at least in terms of them struggling, because they do have like the youngest offensive line in the history of the world. And if any team in the MAC was possibly going to give them a problem physically, it was going to be NIU plays a completely different game than the rest of the MAC in that regard. So yeah, the fact that they were tested, that makes sense. And I mean, there was some fluky stuff, the 88-yard touchdown pass where it was the ball like went through two defenders somehow and ended up on the other side and all that. But it was still just strange that they continued to struggle for that long. And now we're looking at a team that's really only scored 37 points in two games. Even against A&M, it was their defense doing well. And you know, maybe that is a sign that this is a rebuilding year on that side of the ball, especially if they're just not very good up front. I don't want to, you know, giving up on Marcus Freeman a week after I'm like, finally, he's turned a corner. who knows? But yeah, they certainly might be a pretty poor offensive team this year.
It's an unbelievable part about this sport is just from a week to week basis, Penn State and Notre Dame, prime examples of that, of like, hey, they finally figured it out. Look at this. And no, that didn't last very long. Shifting the focus back to the Northwest, I am curious to ask you about the Apple Cup this week. We're pretty bummed that this game is being played where the Seahawks play and not in Pullman. I hate neutral site games, and it's dumb. But we've also made the joke this week, is the right team favored? Washington State and John Mateer have looked very good. Washington, it's hard to get a read on them. They have not great first halves, but pulled away from inferior opponents. Just what is the model looking like with the Apple Cup, and how do you feel about the Cougs and the Huskies this weekend?
Yeah, Washington's been, I guess, consistently disappointed on offense and good on defense so far is the best way. They're another team that, I mean, they're very efficient. Big plays come and go, but they have managed to stay on schedule and eventually looked the part at least. So Washington State's been super interesting so far offensively. I almost had, you know, John Mateer barely throws for 100 yards last week, and I almost had him in my Heisman top 10 for the week because of what he did with his legs. And they're all big plays, which is my favorite kind of team to watch. Allowing and giving up big plays, or you know, creating and allowing big plays, I should say. So that's been, they're very entertaining. I assume the right team is favored. Let's see, SP Plus has Washington by about 9.5, and that's probably about right. But it is going to be, they really do make games volatile. Washington State does. They're just going to, they're going to frazzle things up. They're going to make big plays. They're going to give them up, and they're just going to try to create chaos. And that definitely, we don't know for sure that Washington's offense can keep up in an environment like that.
It was funny to hear Jake Dickert after the game say, you know, Mike Leach probably not happy with that his quarterback ran for 197 yards. Like, what are you doing, man? Throw the ball. And tonight they're honoring Mike Leach. That's not the way to do it. Last one for you, Bill. I feel like every week we go into when we say the slate's not that many great games this week. It's kind of the case last week. And you look up, Alabama's in a dogfight with South Florida again. I don't know what the hell's going on there. Penn State, we mentioned. Notre Dame, we mentioned. Oregon almost lost to Boise. So it was a lot. I'm going to ask you the impossible question. Another slate we look at, and we're like, not a lot. Like, what, game day is going to, you know, South Carolina, LSU? Like, all right, people on the West Coast not too thrilled about that. What is the are there any that you're circling that the model's showing of, and maybe pay a little bit closer attention to this because of a matchup, an injury, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, being that I live in Columbia, Missouri, I was confused. I think they maybe picked the wrong Columbia to go to this weekend.
Yes.
Since, you know, from a ranking standpoint, somehow Missouri-Boston College is your best game of the week, which honestly, I'm very curious about Boston College. They have definitely looked extremely unique on offense, very well coached. So that is going to be a fun game that maybe people didn't think they were supposed to watch, but they absolutely should. It is, you know, there are enough semi-interesting games that we know we're going to be entertained. It's just, it's going to be another one of those weeks where you just have to have the remote in your hand the whole time because you don't know quite where you're going. Alabama, Wisconsin could be interesting if Alabama continues to be all or nothing on offense. Big 12 has K-State Arizona on Friday night because Arizona's Big 12, but this game isn't Big 12 because everything's silly. But then UCF-TCU, honestly, on Saturday evening could be just absolute, you know, wonderful nonsense of the Oklahoma State Arkansas variety. UCF, it seems like a team that could be really fun and volatile this year. You know, a lot of SEC games that we don't know which one's going to be interesting, but LSU, South Carolina, or A&M, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, probably not. There's definitely a lot to keep track of. It's just, there's definitely not an anchor game that we build the schedule around.
Well, there are a couple. I just went through the schedule, like UNLV's at Kansas, and Kansas just lost to Illinois. You've got Tulane at Oklahoma, and Oklahoma struggled with Houston.
Damn near knocked off K-State. Hey, who doesn't love a game filled of nonsense, man? I love that word. There's a lot of nonsense in these games sometimes, and I love it when games are filled with that. Bill Connelly, ESPN college football writer, the author of the S&P Plus model, at ESPN underscore Bill C. If you're a college football fan, he is a must-follow, so go give him a follow. Thanks as always, Bill. We enjoyed the time, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Sounds good.
There you go. Bill Connolly, model of S&P Plus, has Oregon 13.5, somewhere in that range, and the Civil War, and the Huskies by 9 in the Apple Cup.
So last I'd seen, and I'm looking right now just on Insider, I'm not seeing the Husky current line, so maybe it's being I thought that was 4, so that sounds like you got value if you
If you trust his model, then the Huskies are the bet there.
The Ducks are up to 16.5.
16.5 is current line? Okay. Yeah. And if that's the case, that's giving you 3 points on the model. Yep. So Oregon State is the bet there if you're a gambling person and not looking for a rooting side in that game. I have a fun college football fact I would like to give you coming up next, and we'll do that on 1080 The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, or online at crunch.com. Get to some NFL leftovers coming up top of the hour. A lot of things we did not discuss or get to yesterday that I would like to talk about. I want to stick in college football, though, here for this segment. Two little fun facts for you. Actually, one's a fun fact. One is more of a trivia question. I'm curious if you guys can get correct. Because I saw this stat yesterday, and I thought, that's interesting, and I don't know if I would have guessed that. I'm assuming none of you on Friday night watched Northwestern host Duke last Friday.
I saw little bits and pieces.
It was on my second screen late as I was moving around to stuff.
A field goal game.
It's a close game. I think Duke ended up winning an overtime game.
Went to overtime.
Duke won. They're playing at their temporary lakefront stadium as they build their new stadium.
In Evanston, right on the lake.
Here's a fun fact for you. They, this year, with their temporary stadium, are going to bring in more football revenue than they did in previous years with their full stadium. Because with this temporary stadium, they have doubled the amount of premium seats, and people want to pay for these premium seats to look out on the lakefront.
Oh.
And they are going to bring in more money with a stadium that holds, I would guess, what, a quarter of the percentage of their
Doesn't it only seat like 25,000 or
not
something?
Not a lot of... On one side of it, there's like basically high school bleachers, and that's it on the lake side of it. And everybody else wanted to buy these luxury seats and look out on the lake, and they're going to make double the amount of premium seats and make more money.
Well, their coach last year was one of the surprises of college football.
He was.
They weren't very good, but they were way better than people thought, and that got a lot of people hyped. Have you seen the renderings, by the way, for their new stadium?
It's badass.
Yeah.
You would think they were Bama or Georgia with the way that stadium looks.
Chicago, man.
Well, there's a lot of
money at Northwestern.
Big time alums out of that university.
Always have to hear about it in media stuff.
Northwestern.
I think if you went to Northwestern, you'd be on First Take right now. Spewing takes about the 49ers.
Syracuse.
That's it. Yeah. Be on one of the channels.
There's like 4 schools that everybody on TV went to.
Who's your daddy?
Syracuse.
Okay, here's a job.
Now let's get to my trivia question. Can either of you two gentlemen guess?
Okay.
Which college football team has the longest active winning streak?
I'll let him go because I saw this.
You did see it yesterday? Would you have guessed that?
That would not have been the first school that came to mind.
I don't know how long it would have taken me to guess them. So it's not Georgia, obviously. They lost in the SEC title game. Washington was undefeated, and then they lost in the championship game. Michigan had a long winning streak going. Yep. Collapsed this weekend against Texas.
Is it a Power 4 school?
Yes, it is. The streak is 9 games.
Yep.
Nine.
That is the current long winning streak in the sport.
They had a head coaching change in the offseason.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
We do need to go to break.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da,
coaching change. What am I thinking of? It's not Michigan. They just lost.
No, not Michigan. They just lost.
Oh, my God.
Can I help him?
Here, go ahead, help me.
Arizona.
Arizona has the longest winning streak in the country.
Underwhelming answer. Yeah. Underwhelming.
I think you're just upset because you didn't get it.
A little upset. Also, they maybe
should
have lost.
That's the longest winning streak in the country right now is 9. Well, and they damn near lost to Northern Arizona. Is that who they played, Northern Arizona?
Yeah, they played Northern Arizona.
The over, Kansas State, Arizona. Those are no defensive teams.
Their new uniforms look sweet, by the way. They're coming out with a cat script on the helmet. They're pretty badass.
Well, it's underwhelming because, like, who cares? It's Arizona. Also, Georgia's lost one game in 3 years. That's
one game
more
in 3 years
than a 9-game winning streak.
Without a doubt, it is. Michigan's lost two games in 3 years.
Right.
They're the same thing. They just lost for the second time. So they have the longest winning streak in the nation. We got a lot to get to in the final hour. One other college football story I want to get to. Some NFL leftovers from the weekend. We will get to the mail sack coming up at 8:15. So get your questions in 503-864-6326. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.